You know that instinct you get when you first sit down to take a reading test?
Oh, yeah. The panic.
Right. The voice in your head is just screaming at you to read every single word on the page as fast as humanly possible. Like, your eyes are literally on fire.
Yes.
Ignore it.
Yeah.
Seriously, it's a complete trap. Today, we are entirely dismantling the IELTS academic reading test in this deep dive.
Absolutely.
Because especially if you are sitting somewhere in that B1 to B2 beginner range,
yeah,
and you're feeling totally overwhelmed by the sheer wall of text you're expected to conquer, you are in the exact right place.
Yeah, that instinct to speed read is incredibly common. And honestly, it is exactly what the test designers are counting on.
Really? They want you to do that.
Oh, for sure. If you try to frantically read and memorize a, you know, a 900-word passage, you're going to exhaust your working memory by minute 20.
Ouch. Yeah, that makes sense.
You just end up playing the wrong game entirely. Success in IELTS reading is, well, it's absolutely not about speed reading or having some sort of photographic memory.
But, I mean, it's a reading test, right?
Right.
So if I don't read the whole thing, how on earth do I answer the question? Are you saying I should just guess?
No, not at all. It is a highly strategic, procedural process.
Okay.
Think of academic reading not as this chore where you must absorb every single fact, but as a specialized detective mission.
A detective mission. I like that.
Yeah. Imagine you are an investigator walking into a massive corporate building and you have a very specific warrant.
Okay. A warrant.
Right. You do not care about the architecture of the whole building. You don't care what's like in the lobby or the cafeteria.
Right. I'm on a mission.
Exactly. You just need to navigate to the correct room, find the specific safe, extract the right file, verify the signature, and get out.
Oh, I love that. I have a warrant, I get the file, and I leave.
Yep.
Okay. So if that's the mindset, we really need to understand the boundaries of this building we're walking into, you know?
Absolutely. We have to know the game board.
Yeah. So what is the strict reality of the official format? Like, what am I actually facing?
Well, the reality is a 60-minute gauntlet.
A gauntlet.
And I mean one continuous 60-minute section. A lot of test takers assume there is a reading task one and then maybe a short breather and then task two and so on.
Right, like a structured break.
But there is no break. None. You face three long texts, and those total anywhere from 2,150 to 2,750 words and exactly 40 questions.
Wait, 60 minutes for the reading and the questions. Mm-hmm. But what about the answer sheet?
What do you mean?
Like, if my 60 minutes is up, do they give me a few extra minutes to cleanly copy my answers over to the official sheet?
Zero.
Wait, really? Zero?
There is absolutely no extra transfer time given at the end. None at all. That 60 minutes includes the time it takes to physically transfer your answers to the official sheet.
Wow. Let me make sure I'm hearing the reality of this. Let's say I panic.
Okay.
It's minute 59. I know the correct answer in my head. I actually found the evidence, but I'm rushing the transfer.
Right.
My handwriting is sloppy, or I, you know, misspell a basic word in the rush. Do I get partial credit if the examiner knows what I meant?
No, you do not.
Not even a little.
Not at all. This is a brutal truth of the test. The reading section has no writing style rubric. Your answers are strictly correct or incorrect.
Wow.
Spelling matters immensely. Grammar matters when you are completing a sentence. And the instructions, specifically the word limits, are absolute laws.
Like laws you cannot break.
Exactly. If the instruction says no more than two words and you write three, even if the core information is completely scientifically accurate, the answer is marked incorrect.
That is incredibly unforgiving.
It is.
So if they are that strict, what exactly are we reading? I know there's an academic version and a general training version, right?
Yes.
Why does that distinction matter?
It matters mainly because of the source material and the complexity. Academic texts are drawn from published sources like books, journals, magazines, and newspapers.
Okay, so heavy stuff.
Right. They are written for a non-specialist audience, but they feature varied styles and, crucially, logical, structured arguments.
And general training.
General training texts focus much more on everyday social and workplace survival skills.
Got it. And are they graded the same way?
The foundation is exactly the same. Both tests are graded on a 1 to 9 band scale, where one mark equals exactly one correct answer.
Okay, simple enough.
However, the exact boundaries for those bands do vary slightly between the test versions. Usually, general training requires a higher number of correct answers to achieve the same band score.
Why is that?
Because the academic texts feature significantly more complex vocabulary and a much denser structural style. It's just a harder read.
Okay, so if it's not just testing my ability to read fast, and it's full of this complex vocabulary, what is the academic reading test actually measuring?
It is testing a whole spectrum of abilities.
Like what?
Well, the test makers want to see if you can find the general sense of a text, identify main ideas, locate specific details, make logical inferences, recognize a writer's viewpoint or purpose, and follow the development of an argument.
Okay, that sounds like a lot.
It is. But the absolute core ability, the engine driving almost every single question, is meaning and paraphrase recognition.
Paraphrase recognition.
Yes. You are almost never just matching identical keywords from the question to the text. You are recognizing when two entirely different sets of words express the exact same idea.
Right. Okay, so if paraphrase recognition is the engine, we really need to know what the chassis of the car looks like, you know?
Good analogy.
Let's map out the exact question formats. Because looking at a practice test for the first time can feel like walking into a maze of endless question types.
It certainly can. It's overwhelming. Officially, IELTS presents 11 numbered question types.
11.
11. But rather than just throwing a dizzying list at you, let's group them by what your brain is actually being asked to do.
Okay, that sounds better.
A great way to organize this chaos is by using a framework from a study system called Idiomas Will Learn. They group these tasks into three teaching families.
Just to be super clear for you listening, these families aren't official IELTS categories, right?
Correct. They are purely flexible study strategies, just a way to organize your practice.
Perfect. So what's the first family?
The first family is evidence and viewpoints. This includes the official types of multiple choice, identifying information, which is your true, false, not given, and identifying writer views or claims, which is yes, not given.
Okay, I have to stop you there because false versus not given is my absolute nightmare.
It's a common nightmare.
If the text doesn't explicitly confirm the statement, it's false, right?
See, that is a massive trap and a primary reason people lose marks. Here is the strict rule.
Okay, lay it on me.
False or no requires an explicit contradiction. The passage must actively state the opposite of the claim or provide information that makes the claim logically impossible.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Not given simply means the text doesn't resolve the claim. It doesn't say yes and it doesn't say no.
So if the question asks, did the scientist wear a blue hat? And the text just says, the scientist wore a hat. That's not given.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't contradict the blue hat. It just doesn't specify the color.
Spot on. The text is just shrugging its shoulders. You cannot confirm it and you cannot deny it.
Man, that makes so much more sense.
Good.
What's the second Will-Learn family?
The second family is matching and organization. This includes the official types of matching information, matching headings, matching features, and matching sentence endings.
You know, matching headings and matching information sound identical to me. You're just connecting a prompt to a paragraph, aren't you?
They sound similar, but they require completely different physical actions with your eyes.
Really? How so?
Think of matching headings as zooming out to look at the whole forest. You have to find the overarching main idea that encapsulates the entire paragraph.
Okay, the big picture.
Right. Matching information is zooming in with a magnifying glass. You are hunting for a specific detail, a reason, an example, an outcome that is buried somewhere inside the paragraph.
Zooming in versus zooming out. I really like that. And the final family.
Completion from the passage. This groups together sentence completion, summary, note table, or flowchart completion, diagram label completion, and short answer questions.
I should note here, sometimes those completion formats actually supply you with a list of words to choose from, right?
Mm.
Rather than making you draw the exact words directly from the passage.
Yes, that's a very important distinction. Now, the Well-Learn system actually breaks their practice down into 14 focused routes.
Wait, 14? I thought you said there were 11 official types.
Yes. The 14 routes are simply because that big official type 9, the summary, note, table, and flowchart completion, represents four very different visual layouts that require different reading approaches.
Oh, okay.
But never call these 14 routes official types. The official test always has 11.
Got it. Okay, so if we know the families and we know we're zooming in and out like detectives,
mm-hmm.
we need a standard operating procedure. A repeatable system to solve these.
Exactly. Without a system, you are just reading and hoping.
And we don't want to just hope.
No, we use a precise four-step reading loop.
Okay, step one.
Step one, map the passage. Before you even look at the questions, you skim the text to grasp the topic, the purpose, the roles of the different paragraphs, and any major changes in direction.
Wait, skim? I thought you said we shouldn't read the whole thing.
Skimming isn't reading. Skimming is just looking at the architecture of the building so you know where the hallways lead.
Oh, back to the detective analogy. I get it.
Right. Step two is locate the evidence. You read the question, identify distinctive anchors like names, numbers, or highly specific technical terms, and scan the text to find them.
And then?
Once found, you carefully read that specific evidence window.
Okay. Step three is where I've seen some intense jargon in test prep guides.
Oh, boy.
It's compare the meaning. People talk about checking the scope and the polarity of a sentence. As a learner, if someone tells me to check the polarity, I'm thinking about, like, car batteries, not reading tests.
Huh. Let's translate that jargon, then. Testing the polarity just means asking.
Yeah.
Is the sentence smiling or frowning? Is it framed positively or negatively?
Smiling or frowning. That's easier.
Does it say the new policy helped, or does it say it caused problems? That's polarity.
And what about scope?
Scope is about absolute words. Does the text say all oak trees or just some oak trees?
Oh.
You also test for paraphrase, contrast, and reference.
Okay. And finally, step four, control the answer. Check the instruction. Does it fit the answer form? Is the spelling perfect? Is the grammar correct for a sentence completion? And does it obey the exact word limit?
Exactly.
Let's test this loop with a short, original micro example. Imagine you have a passage, and one sentence says, urban planners discovered that planting oak trees significantly lowered summer street temperatures.
Okay, holding that in my head.
Your question is a one-word completion task. Oak trees reduced summer blank.
Walk me through your loop.
Okay, step one, map. I've already mapped the text, so I know paragraph three talks about urban planning and trees.
Okay.
Step two, locate. I scan paragraph three for my anchors, which are oak trees and summer. I find them. Step three, compare meaning. The text says lowered, but the question says reduced. That's a paraphrase, so the meaning matches perfectly.
Exactly right.
Step four, control the answer. The instruction is exactly one word. If I write street temperatures, that's two words, and I fail. So I write exactly one word, temperatures.
Flawless execution.
Ooh.
But, and this is a massive but, that four-step loop only works if you don't fall into the psychological traps the test sets for you.
Oh, right, the traps.
Executing the loop requires six transferable sub-skills.
Yeah.
These are raw abilities, not official question types.
What are the six sub-skills?
First, skimming, which builds your passage maps. Second, scanning, which locates your anchors.
Got it.
Third, paraphrase recognition, which allows you to compare meaning. Fourth, inference, which is your ability to reject conclusions that aren't actually supported by the text.
Okay, that's four.
Fifth, word limit control, producing the smallest grammatical answer permitted. And sixth, time management, controlling when you solve, skip, and return.
Time management is huge, but I want to talk about the traps, because I have personally fallen for them.
Which one?
There is a specific trap that I think is driven by pure biology, the dopamine hit.
Ah, you mean lexical echoes.
Yes. Lexical echoes. I call it the mirage in the desert.
That's a great way to put it.
You know, you are panicking. The clock is ticking. You read a question that features a massive, complicated word like photosynthesis.
Right.
You scan the text and boom, there's the word photosynthesis. Your brain releases dopamine. You feel like a genius.
Yeah.
You circle the answer next to it and move on. And you are completely, spectacularly wrong.
It is a brilliant psychological trap. Lexical echoes prey on your desire for a quick match.
It's so mean.
The test designers will put the exact juicy keyword from the question right into the text, but they will completely change the meaning of the surrounding sentence.
Sneaky.
Remember the golden rule. Repeated words are never proof of a correct answer. Paraphrased meaning is proof.
Write that down. Repeated words are not proof. Another trap I've fallen into is using outside knowledge.
Oh, yeah.
I once read a practice text about a historical event I was sort of obsessed with. I didn't even read the paragraph. I just answered the question based on a documentary I saw 3 years ago.
And you likely got it wrong.
Oh, I totally got it wrong.
Because the text is your only universe. If the specific fact isn't printed on that page, it does not exist for the purpose of the test.
Makes sense.
Another insidious trap is selecting a detail that is entirely true according to the text, but completely irrelevant to the specific question asked.
Oh, the yes, that's true, but nobody asked you trap.
Precisely. We also see test takers choosing a matching heading based on one striking, memorable detail rather than the overarching main idea.
Right, zooming in when they should zoom out.
Exactly. Or they ignore reuse instructions, like when a prompt explicitly says, you may use any letter more than once.
Oh, I hate that one.
And structurally, a huge trap is assuming every single question format follows the chronological order of the text.
Wait, they don't.
Most do, but tasks like matching information or matching headings absolutely do not.
Which leads right to the pacing trap, you know. Getting stuck.
Yes.
If I spend 7 minutes staring at a matching information question, my score is effectively dead.
Right.
How do we actually manage time?
You must remember that the only fixed total is the 60 minutes.
Right.
Any pacing split you hear about, like budgeting exactly 20 minutes per passage, is purely a flexible study strategy. It is not a rule.
Because some are harder than others.
Exactly. Some passages are harder, some are easier. The golden rule for pacing is this. You should only add timing constraints after your accuracy has stabilized.
Okay, so don't rush.
Do not rush to beat the clock if your four-step loop is still broken.
Okay, so if you're listening and want to sit down at your desk tomorrow and fix your loop, how do you practice this? We need a master study plan. You mentioned the well-earned philosophy earlier. How does that apply to daily study?
The well-earned philosophy is based on isolation before integration.
Isolation before integration. What does that mean?
Question type practice isolates the specific decisions and unique traps of a format. Reading skill practice isolates your raw abilities, like scanning.
Okay.
And mixed practice trains your brain to switch between these methods on the fly, demanding exact evidence.
So it's a phased roadmap. Let's break it down. Phase one, foundation.
In foundation, you practice skimming, scanning, and paraphrase recognition completely untimed. You are simply training your eyes to navigate the architecture of academic text.
Untimed. I like that. Phase two, accuracy.
Here, you choose your weakest question family. You log the exact evidence you found in the text, you log the paraphrase used, and crucially, if you get it wrong, you log the exact trap you fell for.
I have to push back on this. Log every single mistake?
Yes.
Like in a spreadsheet. That sounds incredibly tedious for a B1 beginner. Why can't I just look at the answer key, say, oh, right, it was false, and move on to the next test?
Because saying, oh, right, does not rewire your brain.
Okay.
If you don't psychoanalyze your mistake, you will fall for the exact same dopamine hit of a lexical echo tomorrow. You must become a ruthless auditor of your own errors. Did you fail because of a location error? Did you misunderstand the polarity?
Right.
If you don't isolate the disease, you cannot prescribe the cure.
Oof. It hurts because it's true.
Yeah.
Okay, phase three, control.
Control is where you actively train, inference knowing exactly where the text docks, and word limit control. It is about precision.
Okay.
Once you have that, you move to phase four, transfer. Here you use mixed practice. You have multiple question types attached to one passage, and you force yourself to physically justify every single answer with a specific sentence or clause from the passage.
Physical justification, I love it. And only then do we hit phase five, timing.
Exactly. Only when the first four phases are rock solid do you introduce the 60-minute test conditions.
Makes total sense.
And when you review your time test, classify your errors objectively. Was it a mapping error? Location, meaning inference, instruction. Or was it purely a pacing error where you ran out of time?
That is the biggest takeaway for me. Do not just take random full tests over and over, blindly hoping your score will magically increase.
It won't.
You have to find the weakest link in your chain and repeatedly train that specific skill.
It is the only way to improve. As you begin your preparation, hold on to that mindset. You are not a student trying to memorize a textbook.
Right.
You are an investigator. You have a warrant. Navigate the building, locate the safe, extract the file, verify the evidence, and get out.
I have my warrant, and I know exactly what I'm looking for. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into IELTS academic reading. Remember, your success comes down to your system. Map the passage, locate the evidence, compare the meaning, control the answer.